Yeah, we're going to start chapter 10, Psalm 10. Now, Psalm 10 is really a sequel to Psalm 9, which we passed over. That speaks, in the 9th chapter, they speak more or less about the enemies, the evildoers, in a collective fashion. Whereas in 10, it speaks more specifically about individuals. In Psalm 9 and 10, we find the Talmud counting as one psalm. The one who gives says that this is the 9th of David's chapters of Tehillim. So they consider 10 as being a continuation of Psalm 9. Now in 10 he speaks of the individual, about the Russia who really has cast off any restraints and doesn't feel any responsibilities or any recognition of God. And David HaMelech, my first feelings when I go through the chapter would be that he builds up and asks all the questions that really we ask, and things that are very obvious to us, but he doesn't really give the answer to that. Basically, what David HaMelech is going to present here is how the Rishonim, those that are intrinsically evil, how they are successful in life. Successful far beyond what a person could even aspire for. I mean, that which a person who is a righteous individual can't even aspire or hope that he would have meet such success in this world. Yet these Rishoyim seem to be, in a supernatural way, they seem to be successful. And he speaks about this in with great specificity. He points out all the points that that the Russia finds success in. And deep down, you have the annoying question, like, why? Why is it that way? It seems not only that, he presents that he has supernatural help or encouragement in finding success. But what is the reason? Let's perhaps see if we can come up with a reason. David HaMelech starts and he says, Lama Hashem Tamim Bevachar. Why do you, God, stand afar? You understand? He poses the question as if Hashem is the one who's responsible, that he stands aloof. Now, actually, that statement itself is a very serious statement, because you find in the Chumash that it says in the Tochrei and Kisavei, it says that when evil will befall Israel, and then they will say, Al Kiein Elokai V'Kili Nitzahuni Atzor Soeva, that because God is not in our presence, God is not amongst us, so therefore Mitzahuni Atzor Soeva, therefore all of this is happening. So it says, V'anechi, so it continues there, I will hide myself further from you, and the great Soros will come upon you even more so. So it seems the recognition that God is not near us, that itself can be a chet, because it's not that God is not, sure God is not near you, but why is Hashem not near you? Who was responsible for Hashem not being near you? David HaMelech seems to ask the same question. He says, let's see how he presents it. Lama Hashem tamid bevachom. Why do you go away? Why don't you, actually, God is molech al oretz faith. When we say God is not near us, God is everywhere. But it means, of course God is everywhere, but he's actively not involved. It's as if, astir ponai. God says not being near us. How is it described in the Torah? I will hide my face from you. A face, if I hide it, is still taking up the same amount of space as if I'm not hiding it. I can't make it disappear. It doesn't become small. But the idea is that I'm still taking the same space, but instead of looking at you, I'm turning my face away from you. I'm still there to the same degree as I was before, but I'm not observing that which happens. So the expression that God is not in our midst doesn't mean that God is not here, but it means that God is not observing the events that are happening, the human events that happen. Now, we do find to the contrary. We find in Chumash where it says, who has a God, Asher lo alekim chodim alo, that God is close to him. That means when God looks and helps the poor people, those in need, Moshe describes, mi greka kadol, who is such a great nation, Asher lo alekim chodim v'chol kohon, that God responds or is close. So God's response is called Korah, close. but actually God is there all the time, close or far. But close or far is only a terminology in describing his favor towards us or his lack of favor towards us. So David HaMelech says, Lama Hashem tamet v'vachot. Why do you stand afar? Why do you stand aloof? Talim le'itos batzorot. Talim le'itos batzorot. Talim means hiding yourself. Le'itos batzorot in times of tzoros. In times of tzoros, when you, Hashem, should give us the strength, right? So why do you hide yourself in these times from us? Now, the Targum Onkelos puts in an interesting thing. Hiding means just turn around. He says God hides himself among the Eidah Kadisha, among the holy angels. So it seems that in the time of Tzora, God goes to hide himself among, who does he hide himself? Not just turns away from us, but he hides himself among holy angels, which implies that we are not worthy of God being amongst us because we are not holy angels. If we're the Kadesh Shimcha Ba'elam, like we say, if we sanctify God here, just like they sanctify him Bishmei Marom, then the Kedusha is amongst us. The Shechina is amongst us. When the Shechina is amongst us, we say Kedusha. When we have a minion, we say Kedusha because there is the intensification of what? Of the Shechina, the identity of God being with us. When we are no longer worthy to say Kedusha, the Shechina won't come, even if we have 10 and even if we say 20. I mean, Tali, the Shechina goes away, the Bachok, it doesn't come. We can have 1,000 people and we'll say the word of Kedusha. It doesn't mean that the Shechina is with us. Where is the Shechina? Tali, he climbs away. Where does he go? He goes to the others who say Kedusha. He goes to the Malachi. So if we make a place for Kedusha, the Meshulam comes to us. If we don't have Kedusha, he goes to the Malachi. So the Medrash says, on this pasuk, the Medrash quotes an interesting parable, a story. It says that Rav Yehudson taught for 3.5 years the presence announced and proclaimed Yeshua Hashem, seek the Lord while he may be found, the Himatso. And no one heeded, no one listened. For 3.5 years the Rebbeinu Shleilam called out Yeshua Hashem, the Himatso, and nobody listened to him. God said, quoted further in Isaiah, I would be sought of them that ask not for me, I would be found of them that seek me not. What does this mean? Rav Chanina told a parable Rav Chanina told a parable of a traveler journeying on the highway. As it grew dark, he came to a military post. The commander said to him, come into the post, away from the wild beasts and away from the robbers. But the traveler replied, it is not my custom to go into a military post. As he went on his way, midnight and thick darkness overtook him. And he returned to the post and cried and prayed to the commander that he open up for him. The commander answered, it is not customary for a military post to be opened at night, nor is it a commander's custom to receive at such an hour. When I asked you in, you were unwilling. Now I cannot open up for you. Even so, the Holy One, blessed be he, said to the children of Israel, Shuvah, return and seek the Lord while he may be found. But that means even so, the same situation. But not one of them was willing to turn. Whereupon the Holy One said, I will go and return to my former place. Then when the children of Israel were surrendered to the kingdoms, they cried out to God, Lama Hashem tamek mevachot? Why standest thou afar? The Rebbeinu Shleilam replied, when I sought you, you did not heed me. Now that you seek me, I will not hear you. Mido kineged mido. Hence it said, it came to pass, in Skaya it says, that he called, and they did not hear. The Rebbeinu Shleilam called, and we didn't hear. So they shall call, like the commander at night, and I will not hear, said the Lord of hosts in Skaya. So then the Medrash continues, will he not hear forever? By God's mercy, no. Only until a time and times and a half a time. Idon de idon de chatzi idon. If you remember that phrase, that's from Daniel when he describes when Mashiach will come. So the Rebbeinu Shleilam will not respond until a time and a half a time. But when the time and time and a half a time comes, then the Rebbeinu Shleilam will respond. So the idea is that when God cries out to us, you know, we really don't recognize him. We're oblivious to him. And then when something happens, So we go ahead and we cry out to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. You know, this is a story that repeats itself. This is nothing new. He's not going to say one word new here, but it's a story that repeats itself constantly. In fact, I was looking yesterday for a few minutes at the book that came out, Yishariah Yerushalayim, the gates of the holy city of Jerusalem, the gate of Jerusalem, the five olives. Real point in the story come out. So, I mean, the story, you know, Yerushalayim, you know, if you're aware, they're really not, there was a ban, a favor put on in the, and about 150 years ago, that you don't play music at weddings. There are no orchestras. What was the origin of this band? I mean, you read the story, people don't know the origin, when it came about. They think it's thousands of years. Actually, it's about 150 years ago. After them, the greatest scholars were just passing away one after another like flies. And the people were misfollowing, they didn't know why. Most of them was following the Bangshalayla. They had the Mekubal in there. The names, we know who they were. So one side, he went to the Mekubal. Anyway, he had a, in his column, he came the answer. The answer was, you know, they have what you call a column in Kabbalah. What they do is like they fast and pray for days, and then they place a question, and Mamisha, like Tadik and Malach, and they come to them and pray and fast. Then when they go to sleep, they write out the question very clearly and put it under their pillow. And they say certain things, and if it happened, the Pusik appears. So the Pusik appeared. It's in the second volume of this book. The Pusik appeared that you will, and they interpret it. You know the exact interpretation. It says, like, you will be considered like the beast of the land, because, according to Pusik in Kehillim, because near my wall, or something. So that means he didn't understand. He went to his Rebbe in the Kugel, and he explained to him. He wasn't supposed to reveal this until someone else would get this revelation. But that the Harapais, the Keselam Avodi, the Harapais is demanding his fed. It's coming the days of Mashiach. And the Harapais is demanding, or the Keselam Avodi is demanding his respect. How could I be destroyed? And you, looking at me, within the confines of Yerushalayim, you're rejoicing and playing music as if nothing happened. So, they went ahead and they gathered immediately a whole Yerushalayim, the Mardin and everything, and they put out the Gzeira that what, that you're not allowed to play music. So the idea is like, you know, they went and just followed to the castle and everything else, and they were putting in Kvitla, and there was no response to it, until the voice came back. And you forgot all about me, now you come like, and you need me. What happened? And this is something I've mentioned a number of times, that really when you think into it, when we think into it, this morning I was down and it also came into my mind, because the story's in my mind, that's not yesterday. I mean, the idea really that we go and we rejoice, we're so happy about the ghost, we must stay in and go even teach about it like a social work. But really, when you think into it, it's, every time you go near it, you've got to devise queer like the demons, but I mean, what do you have? You have nothing, you have a little wall that has the remnants of Kedusha, but everything is destroyed. I mean, it doesn't even hit us, you know what I mean? If the Kaisel is talking so Kodesh that, may God forbid, the time it's solar, you run there with the Kvitla, and he should respond to us. But he's crying all the time to him, and says, Lishpina, that left me. So we don't respond to the cry, and we come when we need it, you know? So maybe that doesn't have to respond to us. That's the way it is. Lama Hashem, so that's what the Medrash says. The David HaMelech doesn't give that answer. I mean, he first builds up. What does it mean, God is counted in the offering? I mean, the Medrash tells us why. The Medrash just tells us in this pasuk why God is Tamid Mevakeh. But he says, the Gavas Rosh, it goes so far, what God's Tamid Mevakeh brings about, the Gavas Rosh, with the wickedness, the haughtiness of a Rosh, Yidlak Oni, Yidlak means like Dolik, fire. He runs and he hunts down Oni the poor. The arrogance of the Rosh, it brings in that he tramples over. He persecutes the poor person. Yitofshu, he grabs him. He grabs him. The mezimos. In what? In the devices. Mezimo means the schemes. And the devices, zuchashavu, that he has thought out, right? Now, that's one interpretation. The other interpretation is that David HaMelech, the second part of the phrase, is like petitioning God, Yitofshu, let this Rasha, let this evil person be grabbed, the Mezimos, ensnared in the plots, Zuchashavu, that he had plotted. So there are two interpretations. One interpretation is that the second part of the passage goes on the first, that the Russia goes and persecutes the poor person and catches him and ensnares him in the plots that he had envisioned. Another interpretation of the second passage, part of the phrase is, like it's a prayer to God, Yitovshu, let this God, or this Russia, let him be grabbed and let him fall into his own trap. So there are two ways to learn it, if the trap is on the other one, or that the Russia himself should fall in the own trap. Now, why does he put in the word gava? Begavas Russia, yidlak on him. Now, why did the Russia need a gaiva? I mean, the fact is that the person himself is like a Russia. He's a Russia. Gava means arrogance. What does he need the arrogance for? So the Rabbeinu Yonah, the Shari Tshuva, writes the point that haughtiness and pride, he said, gives man a evil inclination, gives the Yetzer Hara the power to overcome him. Haughtiness, gaiva, gives the Yetzer Hara the power to overcome man. And he quotes this passage, the gava shvoshe yidlak onim. So it seems that the gava is an important part for him to be a Russian in order that he should do evil. But if he would lack the gaiva, then the rishus, the evil, the Russian would not do evil. Why is it? What does this mean? Because he quotes the passage that Ta'avas Hashem, kol gava lei. Not only is gaiva a bad meter, arrogance, it's a bad attribute, it's a bad characteristic, but because of arrogance, it seems that the person becomes totally degraded. All other midos rose come because of arrogance. What is the reason? So he adds, because Hashem despises this person. Ta'avas Hashem kol gava lei. Because God despises the person, he doesn't help him to conquer the evil impulse. Rabbeinu Yehuda is telling us here a very important point. The Gemara says, Yitzrei shel adam, that the Yetzer Hara in a person, the inclination to stray is so powerful, that if God does not give this person divine help, a little bit of help, then everybody would fall prey to the Yetzer Hara. And the Gemara brings the Gemara brings a case from David HaMelech. David HaMelech, when he was running away from Shaul, we spoke about last week, chapter 26, and when he caught Shaul, out of frustration, he said, why is this my lot that Shaul should chase me? He says, Im Hashem isiso, if God enticed me, meaning if God brings this about, so then I will like offer a sacrifice. And if it's my enemies that are doing the enticing, so please, God, intervene on my behalf. So he uses the expression, Im Hashem isiso, God enticed him. That's a very strong expression. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, oh, you think that he means enticing, because you say that I'm enticing someone, I'll let you see that you will fail on a very simple thing without my getting involved at all. And what happens? It says that David went ahead and he counted the children of Israel not in the proper manner, according to some without Shkoli, and therefore he went ahead and a plague came to the children of Israel. So what kind of a punishment was that? So he says, some interpret this that God's intervention is, according to you, is called enticement. That means you want to be left alone without God's intervention at all. So if God will not intervene, he says, we'll see how far you will go. You will stumble even over a simple matter which young children, the Gemara says, are aware of, and you will go ahead and you will commit such a grave sin. So what is the meaning? So they explain that if Hashem takes away his supervision or his concern, so the person constantly, without hashgacha, will stumble and will fall. Here the same idea that Rabbeinu Yonah is telling us, that Tavas Hashem kol gava lei, God can't be in the environs, he can't be in the surroundings, in the presence of this person who's haughty. So therefore, if this person, because of gaiva, God takes away his presence. If he takes away his presence, so therefore, in a sense, he succumbs to all the evil midos and to the temptations. The gavas Russia, the fact that the Russia has this gaiva, therefore, yitlakoni, that causes him to run after the poor person. He says, Ki hilel Russia al daivas nafshe. In sentence 3, Ki hilel Russia al daivas nafshe. The wicked man praises himself, right? That he praises himself, right? The Radak learns by his ability to fill out all the desires of his spirit without anyone hindering him, right? You know, Russia, I'll type his option. You go and speak to Russia, and Russia says he's the law. I mean, nobody can go ahead and stop him. He doesn't believe that there's anybody that can contain him. He praises himself, by his ability, to fulfill any desire that he wishes. So Rashi says that this is like a chorus to the first pasuk. Roma Hashem Tamek Bevachet. Look what happens when you stand far away. The wicked glory themselves, altaivus nafshe, in their ability to do anything because God doesn't intervene. That's how Rashi interprets it. Ubeitseya, Beirach, Neetz Hashem. The brazen, the person who is a brazen robber, right? He blesses himself for blaspheming God. Beitseya means the person who is a robber. Bebe, he blesses himself, Neetz Hashem, that he blasphemes God. See, he can blaspheme Hashem, and still all will be well. Like Titus came into the Beis Hamikdash, and he committed a great sin. Well, the Russia was so far that he could really blaspheme Hashem. So David HaMelech says, when you got a Tamid Mevachai, in a sense, it's as if there is no God. I mean, you close your eyes, you go away here in Kaddisha, and the Russia has total freedom and total license to do whatever he wants. Betzeya Beirach, Ubetzeya. The one who's a Betzeya Beirach, he blesses himself, Niyach Hashem, that he laughs, he can blaspheme God, and where is the God of the Jews? Nothing happens. And this we see through history, through the many times that it happens. When God took himself away, he totally took himself away to the degree that the evil was rampant so strongly. Now, the Pasuk Betzeya Beirach, Neyach Hashem, is a very common Pasuk, you may have heard it. The word Betzeya, Betza means gain. Ma Betza kinahari yisachinu, we had last week said, when the brothers said, what will we gain that we will kill our brothers? So they use it for the idea of a brazen person, but the word Betzeya also means to break bread. Right? When you're Betzeya lechem, you break a piece of bread, you separate bread. So the Gemara learns that in Brachas, that if you rob wheat, hareshe gozo sochinu, if you steal wheat, you rob wheat, the tochnon, and you grind it, and then you go ahead and you knead the wheat, and you go ahead and you separate challah from it, and then you want to say a bracha over it. So it says that's not considered a bracha. Ubeitseya, the one who creates bread that's not his, beira, and he wants to make a blessing, nietz Hashem, he blasphemes Hashem. That's a blasphemy of God. Now it. Of course, everybody will agree that that's true, you know. Of course, if I go ahead and I go into your store and I grab 5 pounds of flour, right? Every good Jew will tell you, if I go in your store and I grab 5 pounds of flour and I go home and I bake it and I want to make a muffin, it's not nice, all right? But not everybody will say that if a person comes in to me and he asks me how much does the 5 pounds of flour cost, and I see I have a real chevelman here, a real caner, so I say, oh, the flour is $5. Really, the flour is worth 50 cents, but I take $5 for it. I get to eat. I took the $5. Then I go ahead and I buy the best shchita. It costs a dollar extra pound of meat. Because I have $5, so I can buy the gladkosher of flesh for the extra dollar. And then I'll put it in a halig at Shon Shabbos, and I'll sit with my kapot, and I'll make a flour. That's not any different than if the other guy steals the flour and bakes bread and makes the flour. What's enough to eat? That's also a bit say. If I stole money for the flour and I purchase something else for it, and I consider myself to be a fine Jew. Here you'll get a big fight from a lot of people. Everybody will admit that you're going to steal or you're baking, but here that you steal from a person money and then you go and you buy flour and then you make a bracha, then they'll say no, that's stealing money. They won't recognize the Betzeya Be'ah Niyat Hashem. But it goes very, very far. How far does it go? Halacha is in Shulchan Aruch, in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, even brought down halacha, it means that if a person runs over to the army without permission against the people's will, and he makes a bracha, so you're not supposed to answer. Why? And they quote this pasuk, Ubeitseya Beirach. If you rob, if you go make a bracha, that's not robbing God, but Neetz Hashem, that's blasphemy God. So it's interesting. This phrase, which David HaMelech originally said, in Beitseya Beirach Neetz Hashem, meaning a person who goes ahead and he is a gun, he's a person who is a brazen robber. Niyat Hashem, the Gemara takes it out of that scenario, and the Gemara depicts other examples of Bitzei Abayot Niyat Hashem, so much so that if somebody goes up because he doesn't get reshus from the Gabbai and the people don't want him to daven, and he runs up al Korach and he davens for the Omed, you're not supposed to answer Omed because Bitzei Abayot Niyat Hashem. So each message, each moral, each teaching has a very broad spectrum from what you can learn, the lesson that you can derive from it. Then he continues, Rasha kegoive ape. The Rasha kegova ape, in the pride, gova again is the pride, apo. Apo is like his face, his countenance. That means his actual being. He lifts up his head. Some Rashi says apo is a nose. So he says, the Rasha like kegoive apo. It's like saying he shakes his head towards God. His nose points up towards God. He defies God. Bal Yidrosh. So he says, I can do what I want. Bal Yidrosh. God will not intercede, right? Or others learn, Rashi says, Bal Yidrosh, Ein Elokim, there is no God. Kol Mezimosov, who will call me to answer. There is no God, right? Or, why does the Rasha behave this way? He says, Ein Elokim, there is no God. Others interpret the Rasha, Bal Yidrosh, he won't seek God, because he is very haughty, and a person that's haughty will not seek God. So either the Rasha says that there is no God, or because he's haughty, he doesn't seek God. Other times he don't say that because it's haughty. The fact that he walks around with his nose up in the air, that shows that he believes there is no God. Now, Ein Elokim kol mezimosov. All of his thoughts are that there is no God. What does it mean? There is no God. All his thoughts, what does it mean, all of his thoughts? We would think the last thing in the world that the Rasha would think about is that there is no God. What does he have to say that there is no God? This, my Rebbe is a kind of God. I heard this many times. He says that deep down in his heart, the heretic too, the person who's a heretic, he recognizes the truth of God's omnipotence, like we learned last week. I mean, deep down, you see that God is there, but it gives him no rest. The fact that God is there, so it gives him no rest. So since this wicked man wishes to remain uninhibited and unrestricted, he feels compelled to smother the eternal voice of his conscience by constantly repeating there is no God. So Rasha, Kegeva Ape, Bal Yidrosh, because he doesn't want to follow God, so Ein Elokim kol mezimosov. He is constantly saying there is no God. He knows there's a gnawing conscience, and it recedes further and further, obviously, until he can totally tear out God from his thoughts. But how does he make it recede? How does he find this kind of quiet, which will bring him a certain peace? By repeating again and again, Ein Elokim, there is no God, there is no God. Trying to talk himself into this belief. Yochilu dvachov b'chol eis. His ways are always successful. One would think that the wicked one would find certain obstacles better than a righteous one. He shouldn't be. And a righteous one is always finding obstacles in life. We always have tzaras. Yet this wicked one seems that there is no tzaras. B'chol eis. Always. Yochilu dvachov. He is right. He is always favorable. He always finds success. They interpret the word Yochilu as success. The Cholais, it's an extraordinary phenomenon the way the Malden interprets. The fact that he is always successful. Mavom Mishpatecha Minegdo. It's as if. Mavom Mishpatecha Minegdo, as if your Mishpatim, your laws, are elevated Minegdo from him. That means he himself has nothing to worry about. The Malden points out, even at a time, it would seem, when the entire world has famine, when the entire world is plunged into agony, this Rasha, in one way or another, this Rasha is able to elude and is able to circumvent the problems that all of man feels and that all of man has to suffer. So he says, Mavom Mishpatecha, it's beyond him, like the laws, the Mishpatim that God brings, is Menegdo, it's beyond him. Kol Tzorot, if anybody seems to cause him any trouble, right? Yofiach Kohen, either he blows at them, he puffs at them, and they blow away, or yafiat for him from the expression of trap, he's able to ensnare them in a trap. This is the Russia. The Russia has total freedom, total license. Kol tzolovav yafiat for him, he just puffs at them, and automatically by puffing at them, so they will go ahead and they will disappear. That is the greatness of the Russia. Now, how does this mean that the Gemara goes even further? The Gemara says that if you see a wicked man, the Gemara forewarns us, and the Shashom is Achekislam, that the hour smiles at him, it says don't antagonize him, because it says his ways are successful at all times. What is more, he will emerge, the Gemara says, further victorious from all the trials. And it quotes this passage, that Moron Mishpatecha Minegdo, it seems that he's not under the judgments of God, like the judgments that happen to mankind doesn't affect him. And not only that, to say fine, so naturally he's eluded from this, but even his enemies, even his fine enemies, people that are better than him, they will topple over when he puffs at them. Yafiat man, when he puffs at them, they will fall over. So the Gemara quotes this, not a question gnawing away of why. Why is it that way? That's what David HaMelech is like calling out. Why is it that way? So really, the production is Loma Hashem Tamid Mevachim. The question is not why is it that way. The basic question is Loma Hashem Tamid Mevachim. Why God do you stand afar? But once we say that God stands afar, so then there is no question why is it that way. Because evil and good have a free reign. And the power of evil is stronger, it's unbridled. Just like when the power of good unleashes itself, so the power of good is also not contained, it can be tremendous. We see stories of goodness of deeds that people do, and we say, how could the person be so good? How could the person be such a thot? There is no end to the degree of greatness that a person can ascend to in righteousness. In the same thing, in the power of evil, there's no end. So if God is here, if you take God in, so obviously, if he's among you, then the power of evil is also contained. But if God goes away, so the power of evil, true, unadulterated, pure evil, rampant. And what is the question? Why God made it that way? That's not the question. Because it says that the nations of the king are in kosher, good and evil. Except God says that good will triumph ultimately. But you have to have God standing with you. Like we said, God standing with us has two things. First of all, it's the protection of the tzaddik. And if God is with us, so the Russia himself is not that evil. But Lama Hashem Tamid Melachek, if God stands away, then all of this comes up. David says, why do you stand away? Well, that there the Medrash gave us. The Medrash told us why God stood away. He gave us a parable with the soldier, with the commander, that he called, invited him to come into the camp. He didn't come in the daytime. He only wanted to come at night. But once when God, you want to come at night, you can't come at night, Chayes Ayago. The beasts of the field run free. Why? Because like David HaMelech says later in Tehillim, Goy Chayes Ayago, the night was given to the beasts. So if you go ahead and you make it night because you don't want God with you, so that's the power of the Russia. He was created with that power, unbridled, uncontained, to be free and do what he wants. So you can't ask on each question, why is it that way? The question is one. Lama Hashem Tamid Mevachek. All of these come out as results of this one question. Now, obviously, David HaMelech is saying this is a prayer to God. So he's not going to give the answer. He's petitioning God that God should come in to us, like begging him, realizing it. Amar Belibo, the Rashi goes further. He thinks that he'll live forever. Bal emot, I'll never fall. Lador bador, asher lo bavo. In all generations, asher lo bavo, I'll never be find difficulties. I'll never be having to undergo any mishaps. But he uses the expression, Rashi said, Radak said, generations, lador bador. How many generations does he think he'll live? The Russia, since everything is going so fine, he thinks he's going to live almost forever. Lador v'dor. Right? Lador v'dor, asher lo baror. No evil can befall me. He thinks, like the Malbim says, he's exempt from human misfortunes. Everything is going fine. Basically what he's saying, that evil itself, you have to, when evil is strong and prevalent, you have to be very concerned with it, and you have to be aware that not that good doesn't necessarily, good ultimately will triumph, but it doesn't mean this minute to this time, because Russia has a certain strength of its own. It's like a wild dog that I should avert him and not let him bite me. But we walk right by it because that's evil and has no shlita, and has no power. It's against the Torah, for example, against all laws of human survival, against Torah. If a guy, if you're going to stand up just for your money, and he's going to shoot you. You give him the money and let God. So now, should you stand up for your money and say that evil has no shlita, no power, and therefore I'm in, so there's no way I'm going to be harmed? Or do you recognize the fact that if he is evil and he is successful, the chances are that he will overpower you. And you can't rest assured that you're right and he's wrong, and therefore you will be saved because of the power of right. Be a wicked man, do not antagonize him. That means try to avert antagonizing him on a personal level, but I can't mean that I shouldn't come up and say your name is right or your name is wrong and so on. That, you know, that you have to do to a certain degree. You have to do that to a certain degree. Although that itself is a question. I mean, to how much you have to do it. Say you've been doing it a long time, and there's really no purpose in doing it because you won't accomplish anything more. So, I mean, everything is subjective. The general idea is that you can't say, I can walk free, I have an automatic shield.
No evil will fall me. I'll never fall. Then he continues, Olah piu molech. This is more a white-collar crime. Fills his mouth with oaths, right? When they wish to deceive other people, so they're ready to swear with their entire mouth. They have, right, without hesitation or fear, because they want to convince people how sincere they are. You know, a person who's always ready to swear, so you have to question his sincerity. So he says, Olah piu molech. Oaths he fills up his mouth with. Umirmos v'soch, right? Umirmos v'soch. And in it he has mirma meaning deception, and soch is also malice. And he says, tachas l'sheine. But that's in his mouth. But tachas l'sheine, underneath his tongue, that means inside, omol ve'oven. He has omol ve'oven, mischief and iniquity of the thoughts. That means although the person in his mouth and everything, he's swearing very nicely. It's effort, what we say is effort to bear, the effort belay, we use the expression. One thing in his mouth, an effort belay in his heart. Most people are that way. There is a certain intelligence, you know. There's a certain intelligence that separates from the heart to the speech. The only time that you don't have that is when a person is drunk. There's a saying, was nichter nachnausen is bashiker nachnzum. What does it mean that what a person who is sober, what he has inside, a drunk has in his mouth, because a person who has control of himself, there's a certain filter. So he doesn't say everything that he means. It filters out differently. And he knows, for better or for worse, he is very, when we're speaking, we want to phrase something. We take the thought, and then we put it into words, into phrases. So actually, we're able, in a sense, to doctor it, to culture it a little. But a person who is shika, he doesn't have that staple, so whatever comes just lashes out, just goes out. So he says, a lashe is even smarter in that sense. Olah piu mole umir mitzvotech. All of it is glib, a glib tongue. But tachas l'sheine, lower than the tongue, however, omol ve'oven. Yeshev, he sits, b'ma'arev. Ma'arev is an ambush. Chatserim, chatser is open. Near open cities, he sits in ambush. Now, the Mistorim, in a hidden place, Yaharag Noki, he kills the innocent. So it's interesting how he uses the expression here. He sits in ambush in an open city. An open city is not ambush. But what he's saying, it goes on his deception, right? It shows you the deception, that he's really sitting in an open city. In that way, he's masquerading, and he's an upright individual, and nobody would know that he's a ganef and a robber and a murderer, because he's sitting with everybody can say them. Usually a ganef goes ahead, and he hides outside in the wilderness. But he's yeshiv b'mistor, yeshiv b'ma'arev chatzeirim. He is open. Yet deep down, he's really lying in ambush. but he's masquerading openly as if he's a free, fine citizen, and he can sit among the people. The Mistorim, when it comes to kill somebody, he won't do it openly like a rabbi. But the Mistorim will hide. Yahareg Noki. And then he will kill the what? The innocent person. Because he doesn't want anybody to see. But of course, he doesn't care about God seeing. But he wants to retain his position that he is what? Is an innocent person. Einov Lechilcho Yitzbernov. His eyes. Lechelcho. Chelcho is a person who is considered, most learned, as hopeless. A poor, hopeless person, Yitzberno, hides itself. Now, Rashi learns Lechelcho, speaking not about it, here he goes not from an individual against another individual, but he's speaking about the enemies of the Jews against the Jewish people. And Chelcho is like two words, Chel Shelcho, your army. Meaning Esav, Einav Lechelcho Yitzberno. His eye is what? Is looking out to attack your army, to attack the Jewish people. Or others say Chelcho means a person who is helpless and oppressed. Yerav Bemistor Ke'aryeh. He lurks in hiding, Bemistor in hiding Ke'aryeh like a lion. Now, like a lion, he waits until the last possible moment before he would pounce on his prey. Because if he reveals himself too early, the victim will go away. So here also, he will be openly fine and friendly. Till the last moment, when he is ready to devour and destroy, then he will go ahead and he will reveal himself. Now, like the Rambam says, that a wicked man is worse than an lion and a beast, right? Because the beast doesn't have any mental capacity to go ahead and scheme and provide an ambush. A beast, when it sees something, it lashes out, it jumps at it. But it doesn't have the ability, the scheming ability, to go ahead and to prepare. But man has an intellect, far-reaching intellect. So therefore he is able to go ahead and through any kind of ingenious ways, he's able to plan ambush in order to go ahead and to kill out the innocent. So it says, but so he's even worse than an ayah. He says, Basuka Yera, he lurks hiddenly, Yera meaning from, again, lurking and ambushing, Lachatov Oni, to grab the poor person. And Yachtov Oni, Bimoshkov Merishto, when he goes ahead and when he draws his net, he seizes the poor. Now the Radak says, what is he adding in the last four words? Yachtov money the mushka benishka. Because you say he may also plant other people there to stop the army. He wants to remain hidden. He wants to remain the innocent one. You know, nobody ever sees the head of the mafia being as a gunner. He's a very innocent, a good citizen. But what does he do? He sends out other people. So the Radak says that the robber is compared to the trapper who sets his nets for the birds, and he's far away, he holds the strings of the nets, waiting to draw them when the bird comes. But who captured him? Not him, and the bird. So similarly also, he says, the robbers usually put one of the members of their band on the road, unarmed, right? Like this is the Radak writing. You know, like you put a hitchhiker on the road, and they stay behind the bushes. And when the victim goes by, so this guy signals and they jump up. So he says he, through his scheming, he is Yachtov Oni. He doesn't go openly to grab the poor person. But how does he grab the poor person? Ben Moshko Ben Ishto. When he grabs a hold of his net, and then he goes ahead and he grabs the poor person. V'nocho Yosoach V'nofal Be'atzumov Chal Cholim. Again. Not, the word is written v'docho, but it's read yitkeh. Yitkeh, right? V'docho means the low-down person. Dako means the person who is low-down. Yitkeh means he stoops. Now, what he's saying is he stoops low-down, and he puts it in the kri and the ksiv. It's written one way and read another way to say that why does he stoop so low, right? The noun, he says, form, low person describes the wicked and tells us that he is as low, weak, and wretched as his victims. V'dako Yesoach, that he is a person who is very low himself. v'nofar be'atzumot, and it falls into his might, chal choyim, those that are helpless. Omar Beliba, he says to himself, shochachel, God has forgotten. Again, he admits that there is a God. He tries to keep on telling himself there is no God. Basically, he comes with the conclusion, perhaps there is a God, but God has forgotten. Even if God knew, the Radak says, he no longer knows. Or the modern theology that what, that God is, God forbid, God is dead, that God is no longer in existence, no longer vibrant, no longer living. He did his work, and he went away, and like he's no longer there. Amar Belibo, Shochachel, Hister Ponal Ba'ol Ametha. He hides his face, and he will never see. That means he doesn't want to have anything to do with the lowly world. He made this world, created this world, yes, but he saw it's a failure. So therefore, he went away to the heavenly angels and forget it. So really, it's clear sailing, whatever you want to do. God, you can do whatever you want. The evil is rampant. So then he calls out, Kuma Hashem, now is the time for you to rise up, Hashem, in response to all of these claims. Kael, God, Nesoy Yodecha, raise up your hand. Al Tishka Hanovi, do not forget the humble or do not forget the poor. Al Man Niyetz Rasha Elikim. Why does this Rasha go ahead and Niyetz and blaspheme God? Amar Belibo, and he says to himself, Lo Sidrosh, that God will not intervene, that God will not care, God will not avenge. Ro'asa, he sees, or Ro'asa, but you do see. Ki Atah, Omo Bechaz Tavi. For it's not that you can't see, but you do look at evil and cast loseis beyodecha to put out, to grant beyodecha with your hand. You have the power to give with your hand, to deal punishment, right? Olecha. Yazov chelcha. That means on you, Yazov, they rely. Chelcha, the poor, the helpless, the oppressed. Olecha, rely upon you. Because you have this reputation of Yosom Atoh Yisozer, that you have always helped the poor, you have always helped the needy. In fact, like we mentioned before, the Torah describes the greatness of God. How does he describe the greatness of God? That the Rebbeinu Shlomo helps the poor and the needy. So this is the appellation, this is the essence of God's being. So therefore, Shavor Zroa Rosha, great Zeroa, the strength of the evil. Verah, Tidrosh, Risha, Baltimot. Verah, the evil one. Tidrosh will seek for his wickedness, but he won't find it. That means if Hashem intervenes and comes back, so this Russia will like grab out, we'll say, for the power of evil that had a free reign in the world, but he will no longer find this power of evil because Hashem has come back into the deeds of man. Hashem Melech Olam Voyed, God will be the king forever and ever. Of the Goyim Me'atzo, these evil nations will disappear from his land. Tavas Anovim Shomato Hashem, the crying out, the desires, Anovim, of those humble people. You have heard Hashem. That means you have always paid attention to the desires of those who pray for you. So therefore, Tochim Libom, Takshivos Nefo, you, once they start praying, so talking libom, you help them form their prayer, right? You direct their heart. You listen to their prayer. So we say that the same idea that we beg God to help us pray, correct? Remember in Daniel, the first part of his prayer was that God should help him pray. And we said, Hashem swasai tiktok. God should give us the ability to pray. So therefore, you yourself correct and help them, as long as they are sincere. Havas Anovim Shamat Hashem, meaning the desire for prayer that they have, you listen to them. Talking Libom, you give them the ability to pray, and Takshivos Nefa, you then listen. Lishpo, and you judge Yosom V'Doch, the poor and the orphan, Bal Yosif O La'arot Enosh Min Ha'aretz, that those Rishonim, right, will no longer continue to terrify the Enosh, the human, the people, to terrify, to break Enosh, humanity, Mino Oret, from the land. So in a sense, as I said earlier, David HaMelech didn't say anything new here, but what we do find are two things. First of all, we find that we're not the only ones who notice and who question the fact that evil is so rampant and so successful that would even recognize that. And we find the seabed for it to a degree, because lo ma Hashem tam et mevokim. And at the end he tells us, however, that even in this miserable situation, tefillah to God can help bring him back. Because God has told us, ve'idon v'chati idon, that ultimately in the time of the Geula, he will come back to us. Next chapter will be 12 and 13.